Good evening, my fellow countrymen and women. It is a great privilege to address the nation tonight. 5 days ago, all Ghana, Africa, and indeed the world bade farewell to the late Professor John Evans Atta Mills, our leader, our president, and commander-in-chief. May his soul rest in perfect and everlasting peace. I'd like tonight to thank the family of our departed Professor Mills, the funeral committee, members of parliament, the judiciary, the security services, and the members of the numerous other committees and organizations, as well as the various individuals who took part in the funeral of our late president. It was a home-going celebration that turned out to be not only fitting but flawless. I would like also to express my heartfelt gratitude to every single Ghanaian for the tremendous outpouring of support, kindness, and love displayed even in the midst of our collective grief. The depth of our loss was made evident, as was the depth of our respect and appreciation for the life and work of Professor Atta Mills. Though I've always been proud to be a Ghanaian, over the course of the past 3 weeks, as I watched our country coming together to mourn, to remember, and to reconcile, I felt that pride in an even more profound way. Over the course of the past 3 weeks, much has been mentioned by me and by several others about our impressive show of unity during this time of unimaginable tragedy. There are some who believe that this feeling of goodwill we have towards one another will fade sooner rather than later, and that so too will the unity that it has produced. I don't share that belief. There is no reason why we cannot continue to stand united and to move forward together as one. There is no reason why our differences have to divide us or turn us into adversaries, especially not our political differences. When it comes to the practice of peace and unity, we Ghanaians have always been exemplary. Whether we support Hearts of Oak or Asante Kotoko, when it's time for the Black Stars to play, we are indivisible. When other nations descended into ethnic rivalry and warfare, we Ghanaians wept and laughed, ate and lived together without regard to ethnic background. When other nations allowed religious intolerance to turn into violence, we embraced our brothers and sisters of different faiths, wishing them Happy Easter and Ramadan Mubarak. And let me take the opportunity at this point to say Barka da Sallah in advance to all our countrymen and women who will be celebrating the end of the holy month of Ramadan this weekend. The reason we have always been exemplary in our expression of peace and tolerance is because we Ghanaians have always been aware that standing united is not the same as standing unanimously. We don't all have to come from the same place or adhere to the same philosophy or to see situations from the same point of view in order to be of service to our country or to work together to create progress for our nation. Our differences of identity, differences of opinion, and differences of political party or ideology have never overshadowed our patriotism as Ghanaians. There have been times in the recent past when it seemed as though we had forgotten this simple yet powerful truth. But over the course of the past 3 weeks, we have been reminded of it again and again. And this remembrance of who we are as Ghanaians, of who we have always been, has ushered us into a new arena of hope and possibility. I consider it my responsibility as your president to ensure that our government emphasizes, appreciates, and protects our unity in diversity. My brothers and sisters, let us take the opportunity provided by our unity at this difficult time to build on the legacy that was created by Professor Mills and the legacies that were created by the presidents who served before him in order to move forward and claim our destiny. It is a destiny that springs forth from a foundation built on tolerance, fairness, compassion, humility, decency, strength, and resilience. The best tribute we can pay the memory of our departed president will be to continue the flame of peace. I hereby use this occasion to urge all political actors to use the unprecedented event of Professor Mills' passing, which so united our nation in grief, to effectively refocus Ghanaian politics and alter its tone forever. I believe there is space in the political arena to compete for political leadership in an atmosphere of decency and dignity. It is said that politics is a dirty game. I dare say it is us politicians who make it so. We have arrived at this point in history through our collective effort. Let us together tap all the rich and diverse talent and resources available to our nation to spur its accelerated development. Although we have made great strides together as a nation, I'm very much aware that there are places within this country where people lack access to the productive economic, health and social infrastructure that will help them make the most of their opportunities and create a decent life for themselves and their families. Together, we can change this. Together, we will change this. Fellow countrymen and women, in the next 2 weeks, I'll present an agenda to the nation on some policy measures we need to take to consolidate the progress we have made. I wish to preside over a country whose ethnically divergent people are its greatest source of strength, talent, and innovation. A country whose energies will be concentrated in extracting the most extraordinary aspects of our differences and transforming them into a source of growth and enterprise creation. I encourage our young people, both men and women, to embrace these qualities in all that they do. I encourage them to believe in themselves and to have the confidence to think differently, to do things differently and innovatively. Whether that involves developing and designing new technologies that can be applied in cost-effective ways to change the day-to-day lives of their communities, or whether it involves making their voices heard by offering inputs as to how to improve our educational system so that it's more responsive to the needs of students and more effective in teaching the information and skills necessary for our graduates to compete with their peers across the world. Or whether it involves being engaged in acts of social responsibility, such as ensuring that the environment in which our communities are conducive for human habitation. Our young men and women can each in their own way become active partners in the creation of a better nation. In this vein, I encourage everybody, male or female, young or old, to take ownership of this country by limiting the voices of pessimism and negativity that seek to break us down as a society rather than build us up. The voices that try to sway us away from a conversation of constructive efforts and involvement and turn us towards a pattern of petty name calling and baseless personal attacks. Our growing democracy deserves more from us than that. And my fellow citizens, our country, whose independence and stability has been hard-earned, deserves more from us, from our politics, than that. I believe that Ghana, our great nation, has yet to see its greatest achievements. For all of our past successes and accomplishments, which are praised the world over, I believe that the best we Ghanaians have to offer lies ahead of us and not behind us. Given our ability to negotiate a potentially challenging but seamless political transition through the sterling performance of our democratic institutions, our judiciary, our parliament, the security services, and a vibrant and largely responsible media, I am fully confident that greater success is within Ghana's grasp, and we shall continue to be a beacon of hope and pride to Africa and the world. Countrymen and women, our nation goes to elections in December this year. I pledge to use all my efforts to secure our collective peace and security. Osagyefo Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, our founding father, the first president of the Republic, is famously quoted as saying, "We face neither east nor west, we face forward." My brothers and sisters, I want to thank you once again for the support that many of you gave to me as president during this very difficult time. I want to thank you for the support that we gave to each other. Let us continue to say our prayers for Professor Mills. Let our thoughts and prayers continue to be with his widow, Dr. Mrs. Ernestina Nadu Mills, his son, Kofi Atta Mills, and his entire family. In the coming weeks and months, let us also continue to stand proud and united as we face forward to work together to create a thriving Ghana, one that is better, greater, and stronger than it was before. May God bless you, and may God continue to bless Ghana. I thank you for your kind attention.
It's past 8, and you're welcome to Behind the News, our news and current affairs program, which examines issues from the perspective of newsmakers and experts. I'm Agatha Samuel. Tonight, President John Mahama's maiden broadcast to the nation. What do political analysts make of his speech? Constitutional instrument on newly created constituencies relayed before parliament amidst protests from MPs over salary arrears, and NDP receives provisional certificate. Will the party be able to make any impact in the December elections? It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. A while ago, President John Mahama delivered his maiden broadcast to the nation with emphasis on the need to maintain the peace and purpose of unity that the nation showed during the death and burial of the late President John Atta Mills. What do political activists make of his address? Paul Abraham-Pamensa is a programs officer at the Center for Democratic Development, CDD, and he's joined us on the line. Now, welcome, Paul.
Thank you, Margaret.
Expectations over the president's broadcast had been high. To what extent were these expectations met?
Well, as I spoke to some colleague media houses in the afternoon and in the morning, I did say this is not the state of the nation's address that we expect the president to pick sector by sector, agency by agency, and deal with them. As he did mention, in the next 2 weeks, he's going to do that. But this is his first public address to his nation, and therefore we expect him and the caliber and the mood that we just passed through to say something that will unite us, that will bring us together, and that for him appeal to the nation as we confront the 2012 elections. So yes, my expectations have been met. That's so to say. I mean, that's what I was expecting, not to preach to us sector by sector, but to appeal to the nation to be united, as shown during our late president's funeral.
So, to you, in your view, and what issues came up strongly in his address?
Well, as I said, what I was expecting were just two, but he added a third one that I liked very much. What I was expecting, one was he called for unity, two, decency in our speeches, especially political actors during the campaign. But a third one I wasn't expecting, but he chipped in, is his appeal to the youth to think for themselves, to be innovative, to be creative, and channel all their efforts for creation in the country and help the development. Shun all voices of attacks, voices of divisiveness, and voices of negativity. This, to me, is the third one he added that I like very most.
All right, Paul, just hold the line for us. Dr. Seydou Alidu is a political science lecturer at the University of Ghana, Legon, and he joined in the discussions. You are welcome, Doc.
Thank you very much.
So what is your analysis of the president's address we just heard?
Yeah, I think the president said a lot of things. But the most important thing was appeal ahead of the December 2012 election. And we all know this is the wish of every Ghanaian, every country within the sub-region, every country within the continent, and everybody within the wider world. They want to see peace in Ghana. And I think that point was well made. They emphasized on it several times. They also talk about decency in our political campaigning to the one up to the December 2012 election, because without decency and decorum in how we campaign, it is one way or the other going to affect the peace that we all desire. And another important thing he mentioned is the youth. We know that currently there is a global economic crisis, and the youth is the most affected age group. And in Ghana, too, we have the same problem, the youth unemployment and several other animosities among them. So he has mentioned that the youth should believe in themselves.
Well, what, in your opinion, was missing in the address? Hello, Dr. Alidu. We just lost Dr. Alidu there on the line. Now, back to you, Paul. Did the broadcast give any indication about the quality of his presidency?
Not per se, but at least, as I did say in my introductory, I said this is not the time that we expect him to go into detail, pick issue by issue, sector by sector, economy by economy, and do a digestive analysis. This is the time that we expect him to cool down the mood in the country, appeal to the nation for unity, and exactly what he did. And I must say, his call for institutions to be asked is also another noticeable issue that we must all come together to appreciate. He called on the legislature, he called on the judiciary, the media especially, for all of us to unite and help build the peace, sustained the peace that we have in the country. We are not expecting him to give us sector-by-sector analysis, but these few words carry load, and I think if we abide by them as institutions, as stakeholders in the country, we're going to go forward.
Well, there was a point that he said politics, we've often been saying politics is a dirty game, but politicians make it dirty. Do you share that view?
Oh, yes. I mean, always in the analysis, we do see that. And I gave an example with your colleague when he was interviewed some months ago. I said, in 2008, we're doing conflict monitoring and peace education projects. I visited a chief in the northern region and to present to him the project and seek his participation. He told me I should go back to Accra and appeal to the politicians. And his example was that anytime they are in their areas, they don't notice any conflict. As soon as politicians come there and leave, there are always chaos. So it signifies that they are not the perpetrators of the conflict themselves. But so we should talk to our leaders. That's what he did tell me. Yes, these things come about because of our speeches, our actions, and our corrections. So I think he did mention that. I mean, he's a politician himself, and he knows what he's talking about. So yes, his appeal to all institutions, all stakeholders, for us to continue the unity that we exhibited during our late president's funeral. And I think if you do that, we're going to have a peaceful election and calm in the country.
But one would say, is there no peace in the country?
My sister, I think this is not a time for us to go into analysis. When you look into our next analysis that we've done, as I always tell you, in the 2008 elections, we witnessed tension in the country when we had public activities of the Electoral Commission and other political parties. I mean, when there's voter registration, nomination, division, and those things. But in this very election, you're quite aware with me, agree with me, that even in 2009, we started witnessing the tension in the country. People assemble in front of media houses to attack each other, people insulting each other. There are so many things that have happened from there, food projects seizing offices and other things. So the correlation that we're establishing prior to the 2008 elections, that there is always political tension and violence in the country anytime there's public activity or close to election. But this time, it defeated our theory that we established. We were not in the election year. There were no political activities by the Electoral Commission, nor the political parties, but the tension was high. So I can say, yes, following that, we don't have actual total peace in the country, but we are managing it.
Well, Paul, he also struck a remarkable chord by saying in 2 weeks he will be making major policy decisions. Should we read meanings into this?
Yes, no, as I said, this is not a period that he can come out to tell us policies and innovations or what he intends doing. This is a time for us to appeal to the people, thank us for what we did during the late president's funeral. But it's time for us to know what he has for us as a president, taking over from our late president in the remaining 4 months. So yes, there is nothing to be read into that, but to expect him to tell us what he has for us as a nation is normal.
Many thanks for your time. Paul Abraham Pamensa is a programs officer at the Center for Democratic Development, CDD, and Dr. Seydou Alidi has joined us back again. You are welcome, Doc. Hello, Doc. Well, we lost. Hello, Doc. We lost Dr. Seydou Alidu there on the line. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. I can understand Dr. Seydou Alidu is back on the line. You're welcome, Doc.
Thank you very much.
So, as I was saying, what, in your opinion, was missing in the address?
What was missing?
Yes.
Honestly, I don't think he has covered everything, but for now, I can only emphasize what he has said. He has said that we should focus on peace and then unity, and also hit the cross in the run up to the 2012 election. But I think his tone was basically reconciliatory in nature, because he also made mention that our differences should not take away our patriotism as Ghanaians, and also he made mention that we should build on the legacy of the former president and also the presidents who came before them. So generally, that is a very reconciliatory tone in the build-up to the 2020 election, and that will affirm his commitment to peace during and after the election. But what he has suddenly introduced into this whole idea of reconciliation and peace and security is he presenting a policy document in the next 2 weeks. That raises a lot of curiosity on Ghanaians. What is it going to be about? And what sort of policy is he going to present? How is that going to affect and effect changes in the political and economic discourse of the state? And I think he has a very short time to present a very detailed sort of policy, which may create massive impact in the lives of people, because he just has less than 5 months to govern before the features of election.
Well, Doc, before this address, expectations were very high. To what extent were these expectations met?
I wouldn't think most of the expectations were met, because people were thinking he was going to say something about maybe how to avoid our fallen city, how to build our economy, and several other things that people were expecting. But I think basically he just focused on the election 2012 and then his commitment to promoting peace and then unity before, during, and after election. So I think most of his statements focus on building peace and also encouraging the youth to believe in themselves and to also think outside the box, be innovative, and know that there is hope. They should be optimistic instead of being pessimistic and know that something better will come. But I think in terms of maybe policy, he is aware that a lot has been missing, especially the policy that he intends to bring to Ghanaians. And I think that is the reason why he said we should expect something in the next 2 weeks. That will sort of cover his fact that he hasn't addressed some of the, or touched on some of the thorny issues that the state party will have addressed.
So with that statement, should we read meanings into it?
Somehow, because I think it's so emptiness that maybe he can't say everything within that short period that he's supposed to use to address the nation, and we expect more tangible policies or decisions in the next 2 weeks. But we have to wait till the next 2 weeks, see what decision and policy that he has for Ghanaians, and then we'll be able to analyze and then tell how he's going to move as a new president.
So what do you think will happen in 2 weeks?
I think maybe it's just going to be sort of minor changes or minor policy directions or reinforcement to some of the commitments of the NDC Better Ghana agenda. But I think the time is too short for him to sort of roll out a very effective and efficient long-term policy that will help bring meaningful changes into the lives of Ghanaians within that particular short period of time. So I think if he's going to do anything at all, it's just going to be a very short sort of build-up sort of policy, but it wouldn't be something long-term, something extensive, and something also intensive.
Well, before I let you go, did the broadcast in any way give an indication about the quality of his presidency?
Yes, it shows that he is the type who is going to actually follow in the footsteps of our late president. He shows that he's going to be reconciliatory. He shows that he's a type who respects the legacies and then the achievements of people who came before him. And he mentioned that we should hold on the legacies of the former president, the late president, and also presidents who came before him. And we need that sort of continuity in our politics and policy discourse in the state. We don't have to stop contracts or stop projects or stop programs or policies because a new government is in power. So what he's just telling us is that he will recognize the merit of people who have come before him, whether they come from the same standard with him or not. And I think that is a very good sign of a good leader. And also mentioned that we should emphasize patriotism as citizens of this particular state. Notwithstanding our differences that we have, we should celebrate this difference in diversity, this our diversity, as it's something that we should be celebrated, not a cause of what? Division and then conflict. And I think that is also a good point. But regarding peace, that is what everybody is preaching in the country. Civil society organizations, individuals, international donor organizations, diplomats, and everybody. So his re-emphasis on that particular point was well made, but I think that was not enough. Something better than that should have come.
Many thanks for your time. Dr. Seydou Alidou is a political science lecturer at the University of Ghana, Legon. And we hope to make another analysis of the president's speech from the perspectives of the political parties in tomorrow's edition of Behind the News. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. Following the objections raised by the Subsidiary Legislation Committee of Parliament on errors in the Constitutional Instruments CI 73, the Electoral Commission today withdrew the document and replaced it with the corrected one. The Majority Leader Cletus Avoka told the House that a decision to withdraw the instrument was based on assurance by the Electoral Commission that a new CI, which will mature in 21 days, will not affect the creation of the 45 new constituencies. George Kuntu Blangsen is a Deputy Majority Chief Whip and has joined us on the line. You are welcome, sir.
Thank you, madam.
So, have you seen the amended CI which was tabled by the EC today?
Hello?
Hello, Mr. Blangsen.
Yes, madam.
Yeah. I was asking, did you see the amended CI which was tabled by the EC today?
Yeah, I saw it.
And did you go over it? Was everything in its perfect order?
Yesterday, behind the scenes in the parliament, the document was given to us as caucus leaders from the various regions and as parliamentarians who asked to make sure that we all have to rectify, both sides of the House, to rectify all the deficiencies within the document before it was relayed. So everybody had an input in the ratification of that document that was presented by EC.
Well, Mr. Blangsen, it's barely 4 months to the elections. Do you reckon that the EC can do a good job after the 21 days of the maturity of the CI?
You know, the document was withdrew because of inadequacy of the mistakes that was characterized with that document. Upon that instruction, that document was withdrawn. And thank God that both sides of the House, taking cognizance of the exigency of the time, we all agree to rectify those deficiencies. And thank God that those deficiencies have been rectified. And once those deficiencies have been rectified, it's a matter of relaying the document. And as a committee on subsidiary legislation, also will help speed up whatever we need to do as a committee to bring up a report which will help us to make it pass. So in a natural sense, whatever happens has an advantage on our democracy. So there's nothing wrong that the Electoral Commission cannot do in order to facilitate the period that we have allotted ourselves for the election.
Well, one would ask, is the majority side in favor of the creation of the 45 constituencies because the NPP did say when it was in power?
My dear, not whoever is interested or whoever is in favor. We are talking about a democratic dispensation, which is a mandate incumbent upon NISI to make sure that after every census and creating the new constituencies or creating new districts, that is a constitutional mandate. So it's a matter of making sure the right thing is, not a matter of the advantage to anybody. It should be advantageous to the whole country.
Well, again, is the timing not too short for this exercise, especially where the parties are to elect new constituency executives, parliamentary candidates, among other things?
Upon democracy, there's no shorter time. When the need arises, we must seize the opportunity and make sure that the right thing is done for advancement of democracy and as well as development and bringing power at the doorstep of every community so that we can speed up our development.
Well, just hold the line for us. Frederick Oparianza is the Minority Chief Whip and has also joined us on the line. You're welcome, Mr. Oparianza.
Thank you.
Is the minority side now pleased with the replacement of the CI by the EC?
Well, let me put on record that the minority side has never been against the creation of the constituency. What we have insisted from day one, and this started all the way from when the LI 1983 was being laid in Parliament before the Special Assembly in the year 2010. What's that? Things have to be done properly. As you might be aware, this situation has actually led to a Supreme Court ruling, which is actually the basis for the problems that we are currently facing. Because the ruling came at a time when the EC had already premised its work on the creation of the new constituency on the LI, which had problems with the Supreme Court had annulled. Hello.
Hello, yeah, I'm listening to you.
Yeah, so the point is that we have never been against the creation of the constituency. What we have maintained and continue to maintain is that anytime something is being brought to the floor of Parliament and it is being done in the proper way, we need to raise it so that we don't have the problems that we are having. If you remember, at the time that this original CI was being laid, previous arguments were perfect, and if, as you use the word, even logic was twisted to the point that it doesn't matter if the CI did not have a number. Yesterday, it became apparent that indeed that should never have been the position. I'm sure if reason had prevailed at the time and people had listened to us, we would not find ourselves in the current situation that we find ourselves today. If people had cited the document and had perused it, we could have averted what we are doing today 3 weeks ago. But all well and good, today we've seen the CI withdrawn and a new paper being laid in its place. We are going to peruse that document and with the hope that there will not be further anomalies or errors in the new one.
So after the 21-day maturity period, the minority side will support their colleagues on the other side to pass it.
As I have stated, the new document has been laid. Copies are going to be made available to members and the subsidiary committee, subsidiary legislation committee, is going to do due diligence to these documents as they did previously. And as we are all aware, they've been working assiduously with the Electoral Commission to ensure that any errors that might exist in the document had probably been cleaned up previously. And so we hope that the document that the EP had the majority didn't lay on their behalf today is now clean of any errors.
All right, Frederick Opariansa is the minority chief whip in Parliament. We thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Now, back to you, Mr. Blankson. Can you tell us why Parliament suspended sitting today?
Hello.
Hello.
Yep.
I was asking, can you tell us why Parliament suspended sitting today?
Well, we suspended sitting to enter into Madam Speaker's office for discussion in connection with this CI and also other issues concerning the welfare of our parliamentarian.
And has all those issues been resolved?
Come again?
Have all those issues been resolved?
I can't hear you.
I'm saying, have all those issues been resolved? The reason.
Oh, yes, we have resolved everything. In democracy, every day you see a new challenge, but it depends how you face that challenge or head on. But by grace of the Almighty, we have been able to resolve every issue that came onto the table today.
So you mean you are getting your salary arrears in the next couple of days or months?
Well, when you talk about resolving, that doesn't mean that when you resolve today, you are going to get it. It depends on availability of resources. And once we are representing the people, knowing very difficult times that we find ourselves, with time, we overcome it.
Many thanks for your time, George. Kunti Blankson is the Deputy Majority Chief Whip. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. With 4 months more to the December elections, the newly formed National Democratic Party is determined to square off with the other political parties and make an impact. The party says it has a vision of making participatory democracy a reality and give true meaning to the political mantra of probity, accountability and social justice. The NDP, which today received a provisional certificate from the Electoral Commission as part of the process to legitimize its existence, is yet to roll out its program for the December elections. Dr. Mambua Roxin is the Interim Secretary General of the National Democratic Party. You're welcome, Doc.
Thank you. And thank you to your listeners.
Well, you have received a provisional certificate from the EC. How significant is this initial legitimacy process to the NDP?
Well, the receipt of the provisional certificate is very significant in terms of the mandate we have across the country to be able to change the politics of Ghana for the better. It is also very significant because of the type of politics we want to practice which is participatory democracy, which has not been practiced in Ghana for the last 20 years.
Well, Doc, there was an initial challenge with regards to your colors, red, white, and green, which are similar to that of the NDC. To what extent has that issue been resolved?
I think we have a three-color vertical, and it is not comparable to any other party in the country. As far as our logo is concerned, it's a white dove. It's like motion, which shows our recognition of the fact that Ghana is in a flight motion and soaring very high, and we want to make sure that our involvement in politics in Ghana is from the grassroots upwards and not from upwards downwards.
Well, we have only 4 months for the 2012 election. Some analysts say it will be difficult for the NDP to make an impact. How do you react to this?
Well, my reaction is that the analyst should go back to history. Most Ghanaian analysts do that without going back to history. If you go back to history, forming a political party depends on the timing, motions that are in the country. Everybody in Ghana recognizes the delusions, the kind of politics we are playing, where the electorate are deceived, and after they are voted for, there is this disconnect between the top and the electorate.
Well,
and we are so tired of this, and the NDP has come to fill that vacuum and create a condition whereby people in government do not align with their merchant friends to dupe the country.
There's Doc,
too much corruption in the country.
Yeah, because
there's
of too
much despondency in the country.
Doc,
and the NDP has come to change that.
Doc, lastly, before I let you, do you still have the relatives behind your party?
Yes, we still have them strongly behind.
But some observers believe with the seeming unity within the NDC now, the relatives may not like to rock the boat.
Well, it depends from various point of views that have been expressed. From my point of view, I don't think anything has changed. The demise of the president, Professor Jonathan Mills, may his soul rest in peace, has not changed anything within the NDC. They still have that elitism in the party, and I don't think the former president, former President Jerry Rawlings, will be interested in elitism as exhibited in the NDC at this stage.
Well, Doc, will Mr. Rawlings be at your campaign launch?
Pardon?
Will Mr. Rawlings be at your campaign launch?
Yes, we are having a provisional certificate now, and when the time comes for the lunch, that will see the realities
right.
We are talking about.
We are very grateful for your time. Dr. Mambua Rosin is the Interim Secretary General of the National Democratic Party, and joining us on the line is poster and Managing Editor of the Dispatch newspaper, Ben Efsin. You're welcome, Uncle Ben.
Thank you. Good evening to your listeners.
Good evening. So the NDP says it's missed business and has gone for provisional certificate. Is the party likely to make an impact?
With 4 months to election, it is going to be very difficult for an impact to be made. It's going to be very difficult, 4 months to elections, given the mood in the country now. Like the question you asked him, whether the seeming peace,
yeah,
of the sense of unity within the NDC, whether the Rawlingses will come behind them, or there will be a paper political party till maybe towards 2016. So their inauguration will let everybody see whether they will have any way. Because 4 months is a tough task ahead.
But should the Rawlingses back the party, would the NDP be able to pull surprises in the December elections?
It will not happen. If you see Rawlingses have always disagreed, if you see ex-President Rawlings, it could make an impact in the long term. So far, if Nana Konodi even shows up on the platform without the founder even joined on the platform, the party is dead in water. And if Ed President Rawlings joins them, the party will struggle to make an impact.
Well, Uncle Ben, we had the National Reform Party from the NDC and other splinter groups for the NPP which did not make any impact in the previous elections. Some argue the dynamics of those times are now different with the emergence of PPP and NDP. Some electorates yearning for change may decide to go in for the new forces. Could this happen?
The new forces of a party formed in 4 months, the impact the reform made, for example, in 2000, was not in the presidential. It was in the parliamentary, where the reform was made up of a lot of cadres, and they were in the regions, and they contesting the parliamentary elections cost the NDC 15 seats. If the NDC had won those 15 seats, would have won the runoff. So, in fact, the argument, the question you asked me, buttresses the argument that if there's going to be any major shift, it's going to be towards 2016. Because the two main parties, whichever loses 2012, is likely to implode into two or three factions. This is where the smaller parties will have some sort of realignment with the party which will lose the elections with one or two of the factions.
Agobet, before I let you go, if you were to advise the Rawlingses, would you ask them to stick to the NDC or join the NDP?
Well, if I'm to speak to the founder, he's the one who matters. I believe that he will come on board, given the recent events, he'll come on board and leave the NDP to hang dry.
Well, we are very grateful for your time. Ben Ebsen is a pollster and managing editor of the Dispatch newspaper. And this is where we draw the curtains on behind the news. My producers were Christopher Sidu, Edmond Tete, Bright Agama, Phyllis Kofi, and John Pobi. Nina Isowa controlled the sounds. Baba Yakubu was my summarizer. My name is Agatha Samas. Many thanks for your time.